Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And you're listening to segment 863B. This is you, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast, and this is Dr. Roizen. We're going to talk with a very interesting, unusual guest. I don't think I've ever done this beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? By the NYU Press, a very interesting book about, if you will, what is gender, what does it really mean, and what can we do to make sure that our laws are fair and our customs are fair to everyone. So we're talking with Heath Fogg Davis. He's an associate professor of political science at Temple University and the author of this book, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? So Heath, how should we start? That is, when we think about gender, we've often thought in a, I guess it would be a twofold way, either male or female, but that's no longer true anymore. Is that basically some of what you're talking about?
Well, the main thing that I want to talk about in the book, and it's really it's in the title itself, is for us to ask that question about the relevance of gender. So I appreciated when you were doing the introduction how you sort of delineated between customs and laws. And one thing that I want to be very clear about is that I think that gender is an important concept. It is for me, and I think for a lot of people, and certainly as far as a lot of our social customs, gender is relevant. The question, however, about whether gender always matters, and I want to specifically ask about administrative practices and, you know, public policies where we invoke gender, to question our need to do that. And so in the book, I have four case studies where I consider that question and look at the different policies governing restrooms, for example, and sports, education, and even birth certificates, passports, driver's licenses, to question our need to invoke gender in those specific places, specifically because those practices they trigger discrimination for some transgender people and some intersex people and some people who are neither, identify as neither of those identities. And so we can kind of get into that in our conversation, but it really is to sort of open up a discussion about, as you pointed out, like what is gender? What do we mean by that? Transgender and intersex people have always existed, but what's new today is that our society is sort of coming to terms with those identities and putting a name to those identities and those experiences, and we're talking about these issues in a public way.
Well, one of the issues you bring up, and let me go and talk about this one first, is because it seems easiest to me to understand why it occurs, and then to get to some of the other issues. When my children had a daughter, they chose a name that couldn't be discriminated by either male or female because they said female names on a test score get lower grades than male names on the same composition. And that surprised me, not knowing as a faculty member teacher, not knowing that I probably had this unconscious bias as well as everybody else. Tell us why that exists. Do you know why do we have that unconscious bias? Or is that just a rare event?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense to me. And that's something else that we're discussing as a society more out in the open now about sort of the sexism that is sort of built into a lot of our structures. And socialization is a very powerful thing. And so the customs that we grow up with and how we think about, you know, girls and boys and then sort of name discrimination. That's a really interesting case that you bring up. It's a good example of what I'm trying to argue in the book, which is paying attention to transgender discrimination, which is sort of what the focus of the book is. But then the purpose of doing that is not just to help people who are transgender because they're in a numerical minority, but also to see possibilities for making things better for everybody. And so you could see how giving a baby a gender-neutral name could be beneficial if that baby who might be assigned male at birth and then might decide to transition to female at some point in their life, and having a gender-neutral name could be helpful. A lot of times transgender people change their names. I did myself. But you can see how it also helps people who aren't transgender. So there are these interesting places where it's kind of a win-win. That's not always going to be the case. But by paying attention to gender discrimination, we can often make things better for everybody, because having a gender-neutral name, giving a gender-neutral name to children doesn't harm them. You know, so it's kind of as I said before, kind of a win-win situation.
Let's talk about the sex-segregated restrooms. That's probably one of the more controversial areas. Should restrooms be segregated? Don't some people get embarrassed by seeing male organs in a female restroom and vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, the public restroom case is the one that has really been at the forefront, with North Carolina's bathroom bill, and then Texas attempted to pass similar legislation, and it's pending in some other states as well. It's based entirely on social custom that we segregate public restrooms the way that we do according to sex. And we grow up thinking that it could never be any other way, that if we didn't have that in place, then something very important to us would fall apart, and people would, it wouldn't be something that we want to do. However, when you think about sort of what the legitimate policy objectives are when you're designing public restrooms, the number one thing is privacy. And the second thing that comes to mind, people often bring up, is safety. So the privacy thing, I think, is really a legitimate concern that people have. So, you know, we expect to have some level of physical seclusion when we're using the restroom in public space. This is a design issue. So I argue in the book that we should have gender-neutral public restrooms, but we should design and build them very differently than we do right now. So we have some examples, and I talk about this in the book, in Manhattan and in Philadelphia and other cities where restaurants have decided, based on the efficient use of space, actually, to build gender-neutral bathrooms in their restaurants, where you just have a series of individual stalls with ceiling to floor partitions. There's no need to assign a gender to the stall. And then you have a common area in the middle with sinks and mirrors where people, you know, it doesn't make any sense to segregate those activities either. And the funny thing is that a lot of people end up, you know, going to these places and they use a restroom like this and they don't even notice that it's radically different because of the way it's designed. And so that's the direction that I think that we should be moving in. There are a lot of benefits, not just to transgender people, but also to people who, you know, parents with children of different sex who have to go and change diapers or have to, you know, take them into a restroom with them, have to violate that sex segregation. And you think about people who are have disabilities or elderly people that need to have caretakers in public space, that this poses a problem for them as well. For school teachers on field trips with young children, sex segregated bathrooms pose a real obstacle as well. So My basic point is that the way that we're doing things right now seems right to us because we've always done it that way, but it's not working particularly well for a lot of people.
What about passports and driver's licenses, I always assumed that the gender on those was to help the official or the policeman make sure that you're who you are. And I guess in the digital world, we could use retinal prints or fingerprints just as easily, but it hasn't been that way, I guess. And so is that just an issue of design as well? We should just use retinal prints or fingerprints?
Yeah, it's a big question. We're certainly moving in that direction with biometrics, and those are controversial for, you know, a number of reasons that we could talk about. But I think you're right that the goal of having gender on birth certificates, passports, and driver's licenses really is to ensure that we are who we say we are in situations where it's important that we avoid, you know, personal identity fraud. That's the real thing that we want to avoid. Having gender as a marker is not particularly helpful in that, because gender is a characteristic that we share with a huge number of people. So this is why, if you think about credit cards, don't have gender markers on them, because credit card companies know that it's not a good way of keeping track of who you are.
More of the You, the Owner's Manual podcast with Dr. Mike Roizen coming up. But first, I want to tell you about Organifi. Organifi is an organic superfood supplement line that makes quality, trusted nutrition convenient and accessible. We all know green juice is good for us, but have any of you tried juicing? Not only does it cost a fortune, especially if you're shopping organic, but it is also very time-consuming. And that's why I opt for Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder that you just add to water and get your greens on the go. It helps me sustain energy all throughout the day. It's quick and easy nutrition on the go. And it's not just any green juice. Remember, it's organic, and I want you to try it out, all right? Go to Organifi.com, and we're going to save you 20% off by using the code YOU, that's Y-O-U, at checkout. Once again, try out Organifi Green Juice for 20% off using code YOU, Y-O-U, at checkout at Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. Now back to Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast.
Well, how did it, you must have done this. How did it start? Why did it start on, for example, driver's licenses or passports? Was it for identity?
Yeah, I think that the big assumption was that it was necessary to have that in order to help identify you as an individual. But it's a kind of a custom that sort of, you know, if it's on the birth certificate, then we must, you know, need to put it on a driver's license. We, you know, it belongs on a passport, and on and on. You think about all of the applications that we fill out, all the forms that we fill out, almost always underneath our name, the next thing is our sex or our gender. And so a lot of this is just social custom. We've just been doing that this way for a long time, and so we think that we need to do it. And the book is really about just pausing to ask that simple question. Not is gender important, you know, at all, but is gender relevant in this particular case? And does it help us get to our goals? Or could we get to that goal in an even more efficient way? And I think by, like you were saying, like biometric, you know, fingerprints and retinal scans and stuff like that are closer to this idea of really keeping track of us as individuals.
We're talking with Heath Fogg Davis about a book that he has written, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? And it's really quite a interesting discussion and an interesting book. We've talked a little bit about sex-segregated public restrooms. I've eaten in a number of restaurants where they have no-gender restrooms. You can see that the one example I come up with where I think it might be a problem, and maybe I don't know, maybe it's a design issue there as well, but is at baseball and football and basketball stadiums where there are large numbers of people even waiting lines to get in. And I suppose you could have a single waiting line to get in, and there be individual rooms, but that seems a lot less efficient use of space than they now have. But I don't know all of the factors about it. It clearly would discriminate against us guys because the women's line is always longer than the male line. You're not even commenting.
I was expecting you to say the opposite because there have been sex discrimination cases brought by women arguing that very point, that they have longer wait times in stadiums.
Oh, they do, and that's okay with me.
Yeah. That's okay with you?
I think
the women in your life might disagree, yeah.
There are some funny situations. I often speak at gatherings of large numbers of women, and I have a habit of using the restroom right before I start to speak, and often all the male restrooms have been converted to female restrooms in those occasions, and you have to go quite a distance to find a male bathroom. So I guess it is a design issue. The more I think about that, talk about sex-segregated sports. I've often thought this was due to the different physical capabilities of the two genders, maybe due to testosterone increases muscle mass more than estrogen does, and there's a higher level of testosterone in men than in women. Testosterone is present in both, obviously. But tell me about, categorize that for me. Wouldn't that be, aren't most of the male records in, for example, track and field of lower times, and wouldn't those discriminate then in a negative way against women?
Well, I think that the sports case study is the hardest one, and it's the last case study in the book. It's the final chapter because I go in the order of what I think is sort of like the most obvious and straightforward cases to the hardest. Sports is difficult because there are sex-related characteristics that are relevant to, like you said, strength and endurance, and so statistically speaking, that's true. I talk about the South African sprinter Caster Semenya, who I don't know if you know about her story, but somebody who identifies as female and has her whole life, but has an intersex condition where her body produces more testosterone than the average female. And this raises the issue, and we sort of talking about two genders, but intersex conditions exist, and there are many of them, this raises a question of fairness in sport. And so she has been, scrutinized about this, and it goes into a whole interesting history where the Olympic, International Olympic Committee used to sex test athletes. In some very sort of barbaric ways, but it's always been about the category of female athletics and is this woman really a man trying to compete as a female and get a competitive advantage? So this is a big question. What's to be done? The direction that the IOC moved in now, and it's the same policy that the NCAA has with its Division I athletics, which is just to say that if your testosterone levels are above the average or what's statistically true for most women, then you can't compete as female. So they've boiled things down to testosterone measurement, functional testosterone, and that's the current policy. But it gets to this real question about what is gender? Is it about, is it about testosterone? Is that what it boils down to in the end? Or is it something else?
And if you want to find out more, The book is called Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? It's NYU Press, published this year. This probably has been one of the most interesting interviews I've done, because it is on such an unusual topic, and because I haven't thought as much about it as probably I should. What does it mean with college admissions? What about single-sex colleges? Where I went to school used to be a single-sex college. Now somehow they have absolutely equal number of men and women. Somehow they get that right from a standpoint of 50-50 every year. Why, and does it matter? Well, all of that is talked about in the book, or discussed in the book, or provoked in the book by Heath Fogg, F-O-G-G, Davis, D-A-V-I-S, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? Dr. Davis, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. And this is a great, interesting topic to talk about as we go forward in our gender identification questions. Thanks very much for being on. Randall, thanks for great engineering. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast. This is number 863B. We'll be back next week with, again, the news of the week and what it means to you, what you can do to live at the top of your curve, and another fascinating, stimulating guest. I don't know that anyone can be as stimulating or fascinating as Heath Fogg Davis. Again, the book, Beyond Trans, Does Gender Matter? But we'll try and make sure that we have someone interesting next week for you, and I'm sure we will. Thanks again for listening. Download us every week. Rate us every week. Thanks again.